Hey, everybody. That is Gary Smith.
Howdy.
That is Kaz Kenny.
Kapow!
And I am Eddie Bramble, and this is episode 36 of the Blackwater's Edge podcast. Kaz, why don't you start us off with this week's fish report?
We're back. We're bigger
we're
than
back.
Ever.
We're back
and we're trudging along, right? Eddie's feeling good.
Eddie's
Gary's
not
feeling
bigger
good.
Than ever.
No, I'm smaller than ever.
Right. He's still just about hula hoop through a tear, you know, but we're working on that now. I see he's
not
eating
quite.
A little more, you know, so that's a good thing to see. Fishing, hunting, that's what's going on down here in Dorchester County. You know, everybody's getting ready for some duck hunting and some goose hunting coming up, too. So a lot of stuff getting ready to happen. We got that muzzle loader season coming up here early.
Weeks
getting ready
away.
To happen. Weeks
yep.
away. Eddie's stocked and ready to go. We got plenty of Sika bombs in case you need some of them out there, you know, while you're Sika hunting. But either way, let's talk about some fishing. So snakeheads. Everybody's coming here to catch snakeheads. And you know what? Most folks that are using minnows are catching lots of snakeheads. We want to talk about a couple baits real quick before we get into some other fish. One of the biggest keys of success for me, and I've been turning a lot of anglers onto that, is this micro chatterbait from Z-Man, okay?
Shh.
So a lot of times, hey, Eddie, come on, man. We got to get these fish out of here, man. You know what I mean? But really, it's an eighth-ounce bait, and you know, this time of the year, if you look around, you know, a lot of what you're seeing as far as forage goes in the refuge and these feeder creeks is a lot of these little bunker, a lot of these little shad and things like that. We don't have a lot of panfish anymore for a lot of stuff to eat on, so that's what they're eating the most of, and that's about the size those shad are right now. So live bait, you know, as far as the lure department goes, you know, subsurface stuff, the zoom ribbits, you know, things like that. These horny toads, you know, you can run them subsurface. I know a couple guys have been real successful this week with a spinner in front of that, throwing that around. And don't forget, you know, Daryl Willie, you know, he's got all his stuff out there too that a lot of guys are catching stuff on, the chatter baits and things like that. The hook is really, really beefed up, and it's really, really a nice, nice setup if you want to get out there and you want to catch some of those fish. As far as what we're seeing being caught right now, it's snakeheads. We're seeing a few crappie being caught. Cornflower has been catching a few slabs. He's been giving up some of the information to a few select people, but I know where he's catching them at, and it'll be going on for maybe a couple more weeks here, and then that'll be done. We're seeing some rockfish being caught, some real nice rockfish over Key Wallace, some of the guys that are, you know, snakehead fishing, doing things like that. Catfish. Everybody's talking about, hey, where can we come while we're here catching an invasive snakehead? Where can we go that we can catch an invasive blue cat? You know what? You can go catch an invasive blue cat over there in the Nanticoke River. They're catching plenty of them over there. They're catching some real nice blue cats up at the Dover Bridge. Let's see, the marshy hope, you know, if you know where to go in some of those deeper pockets on the corners, you'll find some big blue cats in there too. So do your part as an angler. Help us get some of these fish out of the water while you're here on your visit, you know. Take some home, clean them up, put them up for the wintertime. It's free meat, you know what I mean? Where else can you get free meat than down here on the Eastern Shore? So, look, it costs you a little fishing license, a pint of minnows, some bobbers, some hooks, and 8 hours of a good time down here on the side of the road doing something. So as far as the hunting goes, you know, we're seeing some kills. Gary, what are you hearing? You hearing anything, any big sick? I know Marsha got a nice sick. I saw that. That was a nice one.
That's cool.
What else? You hear anything else?
I went Tuesday night. Didn't see anything. Didn't see a raccoon, but I heard a bunch of them bugling. But it
raccoons
was late.
Bugling?
Yeah, that's the weirdest thing, man.
How about foxes? Any foxes around? Anything like that?
Yeah, I've got one coming in pretty much every night.
How about any groundhogs?
Why don't you
tell everybody about that little story real quick about the groundhog?
I built a little bridge across the ditch down there where I hunt, and I had telephone poles across there for a while, but I went down.
That was treacherous, folks.
Sunday,
I guess tell
it was
you
last
that.
Sunday, and I'm down there putting my boards across and got it all done, and I'm standing there leaning against my quad looking at it and caught something out of corner of my eye. It's a groundhog running down the edge of the ditch, and he looks up at me, and he runs a little farther and looks up at me, and finally he got right to me. I'm literally like 5 feet from him. Kind of looks at me and jumps up on my bridge and runs right across. First one across my bridge.
He was just giving me a nice thank you.
Yeah, it's just like it had been there all along, you know?
I think he's being creative. He's probably been thinking for years how to get over the other side. You know, he's probably tried to tunnel many, many times, very unsuccessful as it collapses and he gets muddy, you know?
He was
tired
of snakeheads yipping at him as he's trying to swim across.
That's right. Hey, did you see that picture of that guy that got that picture of that snakehead that was taking a drink and got his nose bit off?
No, I did not
the
see
the guy that. Got his nose bit off.
No, the deer did. The deer was getting a drink, and a big snake had grabbed that sick and almost put... No, I'm just kidding. That was a good story. That's Halloween. Let's scare some people. So.
Oh, man. All right. So this week, we've got Frank on here, my Uncle Frank. So, Frank, how you doing today, buddy?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good,
glad
man.
To be here.
Glad to have you on here. So, you are the 2020 tuna category winner of the White Marlin Open.
Yeah.
How's that feel?
Unbelievable.
That's some pretty big stuff, you know what I mean? Like, I've seen them TV shows where them guys go out there and then catch them big tuna. That's some pretty heavy-duty stuff, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So tell us
a little bit. Like it, man.
Tell us about what happened.
Well, it was one of those years. Yeah. Boat problems continuously.
No, you know, not your boat.
Right. You had 10 trips, and then you're pulling a motor. That's how it's been.
What's the name of your boat, Frank?
The Sentient. And it was. I didn't pick the name. It was on there when I got it. I'm just one of them freaky old guys that don't change the name on a boat. You know, some guys are like, whatever. But, hey, I caught fish the first day I ever went on the boat. And the last day I've been on there is, you know, when we won tomorrow on open.
Can't beat that.
No, not at all.
What kind of preparation goes in? Like I know this isn't something you just get up in the morning, hop in the boat, and go out and go fishing. This isn't like fishing here in Blackwater or on the Eastern Shore. This is a different beast. So for the guy that's never done this, what goes into this?
It's all year. I mean, it's all year. You know, when you're done tomorrow on open, you go to the next tournament. You know, when you're done that tournament, it's wintertime, and you're looking forward to the next Marlin Open. You know, I mean,
fixing your boat, fixing your gear.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're doing gear all winter, and you're fishing all spring and summer. You know, trying to figure out where the best spot, get on the fish, keep on the fish, and it's not no one day prep for it. I mean, I rigged for 5 days straight, you know, before the tournament, just for those 3 days.
That's fantastic.
And I rigged all my own gear. You know, I do all my mating myself.
So,
that day.
So who went with you?
Jake Coleman and J.C. Collins.
And Frankie.
Frankie didn't go that day.
That's right, Frankie didn't go that day.
He was supposed to go. He started a new job, so he went to work that day. So it was only three of us on the boat, and those two guys had never been offshore with me before. So usually, yeah, exactly. Usually when I go, you know, the guys, you know, there's four or five of us. We all know what we're doing. You know, we talk on the way out. And JC's been off fishing on my boat, but never offshore. So I was basically like, look, guys, just drive the boat straight. Let me rig everything up. You know, I need an extra half
an
hour.
You're a brave man. I'd say that right now.
Well, autopilot, you know what I mean? So, kink, you know. But that was a great day, you know. Got on the boat first thing. Jake and JC had never met each other. They got their little handshakes in. You know, I introduced them. And first thing out of Jake Coleman's mouth to JC was, hey, you know, I'm the luckiest guy you ever meet in your life. He said, I'll show you at the end of the day because we're going to win this Marlin Open today. And I looked over at both of them was like, yeah, okay, you know, we'll give it our best shot. You know what I mean, guys? And, man, rolled on out. 2 hours and 15-minute ride out. Got to the Norfolk Canyon, same spot I was fishing for about a month. Put all my stuff out, and that's the first line that goes out, my long shot. And I told Jake, I said, hey, man, look, if this line goes off, just pull everything else in because we're going through the scales. And he's like, really? I was like, I'm telling you. You know, I had a large ballyhoo on it, weight probably 300 yards behind the boat. I said, if this one goes off, we're definitely at least going through the scale.
Tell the folks, you said a ballyhoo. Now, I know what that is, but somebody who doesn't know what a ballyhoo is, tell them what a ballyhoo is.
Ballyhoo is basically a mini swordfish. I mean, really, it's about, they range from 6 inches to about 14 inches long, depending on the size you get, small, medium, large, you know, extra large. So that was a large set way back.
And now you were talking about your line, like you can only go up to a certain line on your rod. You said you guys were using a line of a certain class, rods, reels. Tell the folks a little bit about what you're standardly looking for, what you're using when you're out there.
Well, your big tuna, big marlin rods are usually a 70 class or 80 class, you know, ocean reel. And your white marlin are usually a smaller class, 30 class reel. But that was actually a 70 class reel, 100-pound test on it. What I caught that fish on, and any of the tournament fishing, you can't exceed 130-pound line on any reel you have, no matter what the class of reel is. So most of my reels are either 80-pound class or 50-pound class in that size.
And leader-wise, leader
you can go whatever you want.
Okay.
You mean, but you don't want to go too heavy because the fish can see it. You know,
We don't want to give up your secrets, but just, you know, let's give him a little basic rundown of what you got. Don't tell him about the little extra twists in the boat. Did I just say that? No, I'm just kidding.
No, basically 150-pound leader, man. That's what we were using on these sets, and 14-foot leaders. Actually, these were 12s. 12-foot leaders with a ballyhoo hook, and that little rig that I got there on my trophy, Guy Egger Jr. actually gave it to me.
Yeah, this is pretty amazing right here.
The year before last, he gave it to me for the Marlin Open, and he said, I got you this just for the Marlin Open. And I put it away last year, never used it. And then this year, first day. First day, and that was retired, and I actually bought three more. So
that's awesome.
That's a pretty interesting looking rig. I mean, that's really cool.
It's called a flying fish.
Sure enough. Looks like one, actually.
Yeah. So, man, can't say enough about it.
So, for anybody who's never fished in the White Marlin Open, why don't you talk a little bit about some of the rules that you had to obey during this tournament?
Okay. All circle hooks, any bait line you put out has to use circle hooks. If it's an artificial lure, which that's a two-part. You know, the head's artificial, but it's got a bait attached to it. So, that's a 12-aught circle hook on the back of it.
That's a horse of hook.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And that's about a medium size one. So, but you can use J hooks on any artificial lures.
Okay.
You know, squid lures, you know, artificial fish. But any meat you use, you have to use circle hooks. And it's so many different. I mean, you hook a fish, nobody can touch your reel. Once you start reeling the fish,
that person stuck on it.
You get one hand off. You know, if you grab the reel, like Jake grabbed that reel, handed it down to me, I started reeling that fish. Nobody can touch me, the reel, the rod, the line, give any kind of assist at all. You can't put the rod down. You can't lean it on anything. Anything that would assist you.
Except you can have a belt, though, can't you?
Yeah, you can use a belt. I had that one in the belt for about 20 minutes, put him in the fighting chair. Broke my gimbal out of my fighting chair. When he got to the boat, he had his own way and took a run.
How chaotic was it, you know, when as it started to unfold? I mean, were you like freaking out? Was everybody calm? My God, don't do this. Yeah. Don't do that.
I was a little irate. It was crazy. When I hooked up, there was like two or three boats I could see. And then, you know, when I sat in my chair, I looked around and there was like 30 boats on top of it. Yeah, because they all see me hooked up big, you know, on my top line. And about half an hour, 40 minutes into the fight, JC starts hollering at me because he's driving the boat. There's a gunner right in front of me. And I said some choice words, and you know, I don't care who's in front of me. I was like, run him over. And out of the corner of my eye, I see the 70-foot sport fisherman with like a, you know, 6-foot white marlin on.
He's just right next to you.
And he's tail dancing. He almost hits my boat.
Holy
like,
cow.
The marlin comes like 5 feet from hitting my boat.
Oh, shit.
The guy sees it, takes off. They drag him to them, you know, and then he sees I'm hooked up, and I had him like halfway to the boat. And so it was interesting.
And quite an adventure.
Yeah, plus I had a broken rib the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Tell that story about how you broke your rib.
Well, the night before, well, it was two nights before, Tuesday night of the week of the Open, we had the hurricane.
Oh, yeah.
And, about that. Yeah. So when there's storms like that, most of the guys who are fishing tournaments, we're going to stay on our boats. You know what I mean? I can jog if my ropes break. You know what I mean? We'll start up and jog in our slip. The guy next to me, I don't want to say he did anything wrong. His rope snapped on his boat and it smashed into my boat while I'm on there. So I get off trying to get this boat off mine. We're both 30-foot, you know, boats. Everybody sees it in the marina, all the captains, they all run over. Long story short, took us a couple hours to get it straight. In the middle of it, took a couple of humongous waves over to bulkhead. I'm holding a single rope. It smacks my rib. And the harbor master's laying on the bow of his boat with me, you know, Vernon Merritt. And he's like, was that your rib? I was like, yeah. He's like, why don't you give me the rope? I was like, why don't you tie it off? Because I'm dying, you know what I mean? So back to catching his fish. So I set the fish in the rod, my belt, and I'm hollering at JC, look, you got to keep him on the left side of the bait. I said, I can't get him on my right side. If I do, I like seeing white flashes. You know what I mean?
Oh, man.
So well, we position it where I'm keeping it on the left side the whole time. Well, when this marlin thing happens with a sport fisherman, the fish takes off, goes off to the right side. And Jake sees me, like, my face just went flush. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, my God, JC, you got to turn the page, man. So he finally gets around straight, and Jake's like, are you all right? I was like, no, I'm freaking dying, man. I'm dying. So he's like, the tuna's right there. And then that adrenaline shot just blew through me, and it was all good. So I stand up, and I'm looking, because then my chair broke.
Right.
So I stand up, put him back in my belt. Missed the belt like three times to get him back locked in. The fist takes off. I hit the drag. Free spool in line. Shoot. Had both my fingers on the spool, but a free spool. You know what I mean? It didn't backlash.
Get so it off straight. Been disaster if that happened.
Yeah, well, I thought I lost him. Because, I mean, the line went limp. Right. I was like, oh, he's gone. So I looked back over. I could still see him. So I tightened the drag back up. He's still there. So another 15 minutes standing up. And we got him to the boat. And Jake, I realized when we caught the fist, Jake's like, you know, I've never gaffed a tuna, right? And I'm like,
get the fuck out of here.
I'm looking at JC, and JC's like, don't look at me. I was like, he's like, I've net the rockfish in the bay. I was like, okay, guys, I can't let go of the reel. You have to gaff this fist. JC's like, just tell me where, you know, where. So I said, when he gets up there and he rolls over, just right between the two fins and the bottom. Perfect stab, man. I have to give Jake credit.
Is that right?
Absolutely best gaff shot. Congratulations, ever do, man. And we got him in, and I felt like I was going to pass out. I mean, I just laid down.
So how long was the fight?
Hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, man. With a broken rib.
Yeah.
That's 15 rounds, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely a five round because he came to the boat about four times and took off. And the last time he took off, the first time he took off, I mean, we were down. He ran. By the time we got our rods in, we had like 15 or 16 wraps on the reel left.
Wow.
And I had 1,200 yards line on.
Wow.
That's awesome.
So that's what took us so long, getting all that string back in between all them boats. But it was a fight, man. We got lucky as far as getting them in the boat. You know what I mean? Everything went smooth. It was like all three of us been fishing together for 20 years, and it had been 20 minutes.
That's just an amazing story.
Your vows get tapping.
You know what I mean?
Your vows get tapping.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Everything was tapping.
Get a little excited.
Yeah, man, it was unreal.
I remember when Mom texted me. She said, Frank's on his way to the weigh, and he's got a tuna. It's 100 pounds. The scale only goes up to 100. So,
yeah.
And so what did it actually weigh?
121.
So. When that thing got in the boat and hit the deck, I mean, did you think that you had something there?
Knew that we were going to get on the board. You know what I mean? I knew we were going to get on the board. I figured second or third place. Because when I was going in, I started checking the board, and I seen that guy had 114 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there's no way, JC. I don't think he weighs that. Jake's like, y'all are nuts. He's 118 pounds right on the dot. You know, and I'm like, no, I'm saying 100. And for 3 hours, that ride in was like, man, just staring at him, you know, not knowing.
now, was this the last day? Was this the
first day?
First day.
It was Thursday.
So there were still more days for somebody to knock you off the block.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, they extended the tournament. First time ever, they put in Saturday and Sunday because of the hurricane.
Right.
And so we should only had one more nail-biting day, but we had three. But nobody pulled
in. How was that anxiety, just watching leaderboard every day?
Well, Saturday we went fishing again.
Right.
We ended up having three white marlin come into bait, never hooked up. We were at our tuna spread out. And Sunday we go back out, nail biting, still was in first place. Sunday I pull out of my slip, and my port side motor starts knocking. I'm like, really? back in, my crankshaft basically wiped out my port motor. So we limped out about 3 miles and tried to catch a shark, which, no, we had no luck, but there it was. Come back in, wasted a motor the last day, was praying. I'm like, man, if I don't win this thing, I'm like 20 grand in the hole in this motor.
That's what I was just getting ready to say. Yeah.
$5,000 in the hole in a tournament, I'm like hating life.
My next question was, so the motor goes down, you win this money, now we got to fix the motor, fix the this. So what are we really walking out the door with here, Frank?
Zero.
but
a paid off boat and a new motor. That's what I'm looking for.
That's right. What's everybody always told when I buy a boat, break out another
10,000? Yeah, mine's 10,000. Your old boats break out another 1,000. Right, right. You get out in the offshores, break out another 10. You get above my classes, bring out another 100.
It's not a cheap hobby.
No, no, I'll tell you, that's just an absolutely amazing story. Just the way that that unfolded, the kid that's never stuck a fish. And
yeah.
You know what I mean? What is the odds of that happening to me out on Blackwater with a 22-pound snakehead?
Well, I mean, it's just like my wife. I mean, she caught, I think, 3 or 4 snakeheads before she caught a 13-pounder.
She did.
This unreal.
Is, oh, man, yeah. It was insane. I thought she was messing with me because she's half bent over. I thought she was just joking with me, just trying to get me run over to her. And I walk up there. I'm like, well, get him to the bank, and I'll get the net. And I see this giant head come out of the water. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. I'm a, yep. It's on.
It was like, what, 34 and a half or something?
It was 34 and a half inches and 13 and a quarter pounds.
And she caught that on?
Minnow.
Yeah. From the bait boys?
Oh, absolutely.
Snakehead destroyer.
That's why I can't complain about my bait, man. You know, it's stuff like that. Me and Bonnie, the first day I got my bait, took it home the next weekend. I've had her 5 years. Called up Dickie Swan, him and Kathy. I was like, come on out. We'll go out on the bait for the afternoon. So we're out and having a good time. I said, I'm going to throw one rod over. We're just going to troll around. Ended up catching a 45-inch redfish right at the false channel on a 12-inch stretch. Diver. I thought I had a big rockfish or something, but right. It was right in the middle of the summer. I think it was August, you know what I mean, when we did it. So as much heartache as I've got off the boat, I've got just as much enjoyment off of it. You know,
that's
what I mean?
All that matters right there.
I can honestly say that about most of the boats that I've owned. I mean, I've had fairly pleasurable experiences. I mean, and any non-pleasurable experience I've had have not been as heartbreaking as you would think. You know what I mean?
So, well, that's sitting right there. Is that boat did that too.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Gary, show the trophy.
Let me that's, back up.
Yeah, here's something. Hold it up. You want to use my camera here? I'm wide open right here.
Sure. Man, that is a beautiful piece,
man,
right there.
That's all right. That's the dream of my life, man.
That is,
I've been trying to do that since I was a little kid.
Now,
what's it say on the front there? Fourth?
47.
47th White Marlin Open, first place tuna. That's pretty nice, man. That is
beautiful.
Thank you, guys. Better with the background, but.
Well, he can have that giant check in the background.
Yeah.
Hold that up for him, Frank. Let everybody see that.
Yeah, this is the first year they let us keep it. I guess it was because of the COVID.
Right.
They let us keep the check. You know, they don't want it back. You touched it. You know what I mean?
I don't know where you've been, dude.
That's fun.
That'll go up in the old hunting part of the house.
There you go. So now everybody knows your best fish. Now, how'd you get started fishing?
Yeah.
Well, we moved from Frederick when I was about 5 down to Pompano Beach. And my stepfather got me into fishing, like small stuff, mahi, you know, little stuff offshore. And then his father started taking us tuna fishing. And I was about 8 years old, caught my first tuna, and that was it, man. I was hooked after that. You know, something that could pull you for a couple hours. You know, I'm a little kid, almost lost my stepdad's reel, the rod almost went overboard. You know, after that, I was it. You know, my stepdad took me 50 million times down there. We lived 3 blocks from the beach.
Did Mike call you after you caught that tuna?
Yeah. Caught me right after it, man. He called me. He was like, yeah, he was supposed to come down.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, he was supposed to come that day. It was like him, my brother was supposed to come.
I was supposed to go with you, remember?
But you were supposed to go.
but with my wife being 35 weeks pregnant and
right.
me being offshore, that wouldn't have been a good combination.
No, because there's no coming back in 20 minutes.
Just for future reference, if y'all ever need me to call in dead to go tuna fishing one day, I can do that.
Right, man. But, yeah, after that, you know, my dad was in offshore fishing. His boss had like a 55-footer in Ocean City his whole life, so... the guy in Crab Alley, Jimbo, started taking me. And, man, I caught my biggest fish ever with him, 300-pound bluefin. And a 3-hour fight, you know, unbelievable. I was a little younger then, though. 25 wouldn't hurt me so bad, you know.
Now, why don't you tell a story about Pop-Up when he was in the White Marlin Open real quick.
Yeah, I was like 7 years old. I think it was 1977.
Damn, I was only 3 years old.
He was before... the Marlin Open, they were fishing the Bill Bunning tournament, and him and Buster both won the White Marlin and the Blue Marlin, and the White Marlin's actually hanging in your mom's office
yep.
with the plaque. It was a 100-inch White Marlin, weighed 96 pounds.
It was a hoss. Yeah, if you ever want to see it, just stop by mom's office.
I mean,
it's awesome.
Huge, man. You know, that's huge for a white. I mean, that's just
absolute
citation
monster.
Size
yeah.
white. And then Buster ended up fishing tomorrow on open, and Dad was on there a couple of days with him, and they last 5 minutes of the last day of the tournament, Buster pulls in like a 90-inch white marlin and wins the open. And back then, I think it was like $200,000, right. You know. Now it's $2 million.
Right.
So.
I'm just liking these stories. I mean, yeah. keep the stories going. Man, you know?
The unreal thing about that boat, it was bright pink. It's called the Seven Days.
I did not know that.
She'd go right in place now.
What was it called?
It's called the 7 Days. Mr. Day owned F.O. Day. It was an asphalt company on Western Shore. Still in business. His son owns it. He won the Marlin Open in the mid-80s. And then his daughter won the biggest Mahi in the mid-80s. So, big, you know, man, I've been trying to do that since then.
Right.
You know, going down there with Dad all the time in West Ocean City.
How many years have you been fishing the White Marlin?
This is my fourth time.
This is your fourth year.
Yep. We've come close, man. My first year, me and Bobby Granadas, we had a White Marlin go a quarter inch short. Like, then it was 67 inches. We were 66 and three quarters.
Holy cow.
And I know because we measured it like 100 times. Yeah, before we threw it back.
I do have this question. Like, I've seen before where, you know, that you have to sign this paper. It says you agree to the lie detectors. Did they drag you into the black room and put you under the lights and ask you any questions and tie some wires to you or anything like that?
I mean, actually, no. You know, when we went to the award ceremony, Jake actually asked the tournament director, hey, you know, we got to take a lie detector. He said, no, we got you on film the whole time.
You said you had boats all around you.
Yeah, there was like 30 boats around us. Well, there was a tournament boat who filmed us and the guy catching the marlin behind us. Because the guy behind us actually went on the board. He was like third place.
Oh, wow.
And the only reason I asked is because, remember, was it last year they had the problems or the year before they had the problems or something? Years ago, yeah. You know?
Usually when that happens, it's because either a spotter boat seen you do something wrong or somebody complained or somebody saw you do something wrong and called it in. And that's what happened way back when that guy started like 5 minutes early.
Yeah.
Like three boats called in and said, we watched and put in.
Okay.
You know, you're not allowed to drop any lines until 8:30. No teasers, no lines, no nothing. And the guy seen the fish and went in early. You know what I mean? And it's you know, it's not
point blank period. Yeah, no, it's not.
I wait till 8:31.
Yeah, that's right.
Make sure, you know.
Yeah, it's not even worth getting close to that.
Man, no part of me wants a fish caught illegally.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's the whole sport of it, you know.
I agree.
We go out tuna fishing 10, 12 times a year. Well, you know, we're old guys. We might pass the rod off, you know, if we're just fun fishing. But right. The Marlin Open, man, it's any tournament. You know, it's an IGFA tournament. Nobody can help you or assist you in any way. It's you and the fish. You know?
I think that's one of the biggest things in the tournament scene is, you know, is that the integrity that comes with being a tournament fisherman. You know, if you are really a stand-up guy, you're going to play by the rules.
99% of the guys who fish that tournament are outstanding captains, mates, and anglers who 100% put their heart into it and no way, shape, or form would ever cheat. And that's the honest truth. Those guys are super integrity guys. Yep. You know what I mean? You're talking about the 400 most elite guys on the planet fishing the most elite tournament on the planet.
Did you get to hang out with Michael Jordan at all?
No, I actually pulled up next to his boat and was like, there he is, buddy. You know what I mean? Right there. So whenever sunset after I weighed that fish in, you know, I was still in shock, guys. I ain't lying to you, man. When I pulled in sunset and seen your mom, I was like still in shock, man. So I pulled up and I seen that boat and I was like, and Andy's like, there he is right there, man. So they were washing his boat and I kicked around sideways and the guy's like, what you got there? I said, phew. He's like, and the mate was like, he was just on the screen of the scales. I was like, yeah.
That's awesome.
You got a big boat, no fish. I got a small boat, big fish.
That's right. So, I would at least had a basketball to chuck over. Like, hey, can you sign that for me? We can send that back my way, buddy.
Man, I doubt he's the same amount of money he makes per game.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'd have been real happy if I'd had $30,000 in it. You know what I mean?
Oh, man.
I'd have just parked the boat right then.
What would you have won if you'd been in all the Calcuttas?
$1.4 million.
Holy cow.
So, but you know, I put in what money I had that I could lose.
That's exactly
you know what?
Right.
I mean, the moral of this story is that this sounds like an honest trip with honest money, and you got an honest win. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and it might not be the $1.4 million.
Yeah, but
you know what? It's not $20 either. So
we had $4,500 in the tournament total. I mean, fuel, bait. Entry fees, everything.
Yeah, you turn $5,000 into $100,000. You're doing okay.
Yeah, buddy. You can't none, of
guys were none of the guys are complaining that we're fishing with us. No. You know what I'm saying? So, no, that was a great time, man. Next year, you know, I'm gonna fish it every year till I die.
Right.
Now, do you fish any of the other tournaments that they do, like any of the redfish tournaments, the striper tournaments, anything of that stuff?
I fished a bunch of MSSA tournaments until, you know, the MSSA
had the problems, right? Yeah.
We actually, Christine, my youngest sister, actually won the woman's largest rock fish in there with a 44-incher.
And, what year was that? I can't remember.
I don't know, it was 7 years ago.
Yeah, it was about 6 or 7 years ago.
Oh, it sounds to me like if I'm fishing any tournaments, I see any of his family members, and I'm not getting in the son of a bitch. I can tell you that right now.
Well, we need the money. Come on. We need the entry fee, you know what I mean? So, nah, man, it's a heck of an experience for the white marlin. I never thought I'd win it. I mean, I always told Bonnie, you know, I'm going to win it before I'm 50. And if I wouldn't have the woman sitting behind me, I'd never done it at all. Because she allows me to fish without, you know, beating me up every weekend or, you know, dragging me through the mud. But she knows that's what I love to do.
That's important to have that support. Oh, yeah. It really is.
She goes with us. You know, we're going next weekend. She's going with us, you know.
And you just turned 50 last week.
No, Monday.
Monday, I'm sorry. Yep.
I'm 49 holding. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But, you know what I'm curious to ask you about, and I'm sure a lot of the people out there listening, you know, you live here in Dorchester County.
Yeah.
You're a hunter and you're a snakehead fisherman too.
Yeah.
So
I fish everything, bass, snakehead.
So let's talk about the snakeheads a little bit. So you like snakehead fishing? Is it something that
I'm an old bass guy. You know what I mean? I'm a bass fisherman. Did it, you know, same thing.
And the reason I want to bring this up is because we've been talking about the bass. We've been talking about a lot of those things too. So it's really, really cool that you just said that because, Frank, I've known you a long time since I was young. Yeah. young meaning in my 20s anyway.
I've known you since I was young too.
But I remember really back
young.
In the day.
Pamper's young, yeah.
but I remember back in the day, you know, Webby and you and Wayne and Dean, everybody taking me fishing, bass fishing, and back in the refuge when the perch would run and things like that.
Right. To footbridge.
Oh my gosh, that footbridge was like the best bass place in the whole world.
7-pound bass at the footbridge, man.
And now you catch 13-pound snakeheads at the footbridge. Yeah. No, it's just good. But here's the thing. Have you seen anything shift in the let's talk about how it was 10 years ago for us when we were bass fishing. I mean, we were catching just gobs of 4 or 5. These guys say all the time we never had a fishery here. You know, the guys that say that we never had a fishery never fished here. That's the bottom line. Because since I've been coming here in the 90s, late 80s, I mean, I have always caught giant largemouth pickerel, things like that, and all that stuff. And I know Salinity has some stuff to do, but realistically, I know, Frank, you as a local and being here, that you have seen it firsthand just as we have seen it. And
serious decline of our bass.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I've fished it since the 70s, man.
Me and Dickie Dickerson have thousands of hours on the ponds around here. Mike German, Chuck Prowl, you know, them guys. Chuck, I seen him like last week.
Yeah,
he came up and hugged me. He's like, I'm not even worried about the Corona, boy. Give me a hug.
It's funny because there's a guy that stays over on that, and he came over. He said, yeah, he said, Chuck Prowl took him fishing the other day, and he saw your truck over here, and he asked me, he says, do you know that snakehead guy? You know, so that was kind of cool because I've watched Mr. Chuck my whole life.
Chuck,
you know what I mean?
Chuck's a nice man.
Chuck is one of the best fishermen I've ever had. The grace of fishing next to. I mean, he is a master.
He's a master, and he'll show you.
Absolutely. And it'll show you how to look stupid. Yeah. You know I mean? As good as you think you are, when you catch one fish and he's caught 10, and then he starts letting them go where you can't see him, so he doesn't make you look bad.
What about crappie fishing? I know me, you, and Webb, we used to love going crappie fishing all the time. How's that today? You know, I mean, that's not as good as it was either now, you know what I mean?
I mean, Newbridge, all them places, man, where the crappie were, they're just not there. I mean, unless it's a monster crappie. Right. I mean, but the little crappie, the 3-4-inch ones, guys, on the jigs, I just don't see anybody catch them anymore.
No. It's weird because I went over to Aries last week and just to test the waters, you know. This time of the year was a time of the year that I could go there and I could catch, like we're talking
little
about,
crappie.
A little crappie and a little bluegills. And we would fill our buckets and we would fill ponds with them and take them places. But we'd also use them for big bass bait and things like that and the catfish. And I went over there last week with a trout magnet. And usually I can go over to a trout magnet early and you can't even, once you get them going, you just can't stop. And I sat there for, I don't know, I guess it was maybe 20 minutes. And this is what I literally caught. I caught 16 snakeheads.
We're
like this big on that trout magnet in the same spot that
I knew
I would catch hundreds and hundreds of bluegills in fill buckets. Oh, you know what I mean?
So. I remember catching crappie and put a little leader on him in a bobber. and throw them back and get to school.
Big old bass, you know.
Yeah, just follow, you need to follow to school. You could come in, you catch for an hour.
Now hunting. You like hunting too. We know that. So let's talk a little. You got any hunting stories you want to share? Is there any hunting stories to get? Let's ask you this question. What got you into hunting? How about that? What got you into hunting? And what do you like about hunting?
Well, I haven't hunted in about 5 years.
He's too busy tuning fishing.
I've been fishing, man. I mean, I'm fishing year round now. You know what I mean? We go down in the wintertime to the golf or somewhere and fish. But I just haven't. It's been about 3 years since I've been hunting.
I know when I was young and I remember you and I remember you guys, that was all you guys talked about was hunting, duck hunting. I went fishing all the time. Like them guys would have their party and they'd, you know, in the morning, we're going hunting. I'm going down Blackwood. I'm sitting down the rocks. I'm going down Key Wallace. I didn't get into the hunting until probably, I guess, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, really hard to any degree. You know what I mean? I was always into the fishing here. That was just always the most intriguing thing for me. So, but I remember back in the day, I remember seeing all the pictures. Like, I remember the first big stags I ever saw was, you know, was with you and JoJo and Webby. I remember we were all sitting around one night, and I remember just showing me these pictures. I'm like, are you
killed
kidding me?
Killed a monster six-pointer right across the street in Harrisville. Man, I got like a 15-inch tall six-pointer. Beautiful. Lori Lane behind there, I've killed, my God, so many deer. It's ridiculous. But I don't know. I mean, I just kind of got out of it, got into the big game fishing more. I guess the last 12 years or so, I've really been going offshore hard, like 15 plus trips a year. You know what I mean? So
I've noticed that the big game fishing guys, like they're just a different class of fellows. You know what I mean? I mean, like
it takes a different kind of guy to ride 3 hours out in the ocean and not see anything but whales and dolphins and turtles and, you know,
big sunfish.
Yeah, sunfish big as your boat. We had
cool, man. I love roll up. Yeah.
We had a humpback. We went to the overnighter with Bobby Granadas, me and him and Troy. And I'm sitting there at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, right before the sun comes up. I'm throwing some bait. And the boat kind of lifts a little bit. I hear this poof, like an explosion about 15 feet from the boat, man. A humpback about 60 foot long, like blows off. Rolls the boat over a little bit, and I'm like, holy shit.
And he's just messing
with me. I walk over to the other side of the boat, and Troy looks at me, he's like, what do you think coming over here is going to do? Like, you know, he looks at everything, I think it's twice as long as the boat, you know what I mean? And about 2 minutes after he went by, smash, we had 4-10 on.
Oh, that's awesome.
Had a tiger shark that day, like 20 minutes later.
And, what is your biggest fish you've caught offshore?
300-pound bluefin. Caught that with Jimbo, Crab Alley Jimbo, you know. I fished with him my whole life. And I was probably just a pain in his ass, you know what I mean? Honestly, you know what I mean? Shut up, kid. You know what I mean? Just reel the fish, you know? Wash the boat, you know what I mean? That was all you hear from them old guys. You know, we're going in the bar. Wash the boat.
What's your biggest shark?
Probably a 12-foot Mako. And honestly, I wanted to kill it, and I didn't have anything to kill it with, and I cut him loose. I wasn't trying to die out there by myself.
Yeah.
I was on a little 21-foot center console about 5 miles off.
By yourself?
Yeah.
That's a great story, dude. Yep.
I'd have been like, seen it, but nope.
Well, I mean, I got him up.
I'm just sinking gear and I'm gone, bro. You know?
I caught like 2 or 3 sharks, you know, 4 or 5 footers, and that one bailed me on a 50 wide. I mean, so I probably an hour or so fight, got him to the bait. I looked up, he like opened his mouth. I was like, nah, can't even have a hook, everything, buddy. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to.
Now, here's something I want to ask you about. I remember, I'm going back, I guess, 10, 15 years ago. For some reason, I remember stories of big bluefin pushing in like shore in January and February. Is that true? Do they really come that close to shore that you can really run just a couple miles offshore and get them?
Yeah. Well, especially in the Outer Banks. I mean, they're 5-10 miles offshore.
Ocean City, were just talking about that before the show.
Ocean City, it's about 10 miles, 15 miles when they come back down the coast for the spawn. Because, you know, they go in the wintertime, they'll go to the Gulf of Mexico and spawn. And then the summer, you know, spring, they'll run back up the coast, spend all summer.
I never
up
knew
in,
that.
Spend all up summer that. Up in Canada and then, you know, the North Atlantic. And then the summertime, end of the fall, winter, they come back down to the Gulf of Mexico.
What other species of fish have you fished? Have you gone for them tile fish? Or what's the new thing, the OPA thing that I just saw, the big gold fish or whatever? You ever caught one of them?
No. Caught Mark Robbins. I fished with him a lot. Man, he's took me deep dropping tile fish, sword fish, grouper. Me and Bonnie been down to Mexico, caught, you know, amberjack, groupers, red snapper.
Have you ever caught one of those, what's that big grouper thing that can eat?
Goliath. Yeah, I've been on the boat when one's hooked up. Actually, Mike, crazy Mike, mm-hmm. my stepdad, he had a big Goliath. We caught a little small red snapper, got about 10 feet from the boat, and we were underneath a bridge down in Florida. And this thing came up and swallowed it. We were all like, holy shit. It looked like a VW come up and swallowed a minnow. You know what I mean? It just ripped off. You know, there was no getting him in. We never got him in, you know. He like ripped off every bit of line he had.
Again, I'd have been like this. Nope. Big. You may not take me fishing with you, and if you do, you better give me a $50 rock that's going over the side if I don't like what's on the other end. I can tell you that right now.
We keep our rods like tied to the boat. You know what I mean? Our rods are a couple thousand dollars a piece. That's not for the faint of heart, man.
No.
You know? But it's the most incredible feeling ever when you get out there. Bonnie never thought she'd like it. She's still scared. When I take her 60 miles off, she's like, don't tell me how far we're at. I don't want to know. I don't want to know where we're at. And then she looks at my little GPS when we get back. She's like, man. You know, be like, how? I'm like.
Yeah. For me, 100 yards, 60 miles, doesn't matter if I can swim. No.
Yeah, you're not going to swim my way.
If it's over 100 yards, I ain't going to make it anyway.
Well, 60 miles offshore, you're only going to make it 100 yards whether you can swim or not.
That's what I'm saying.
Before I forget, we have another one of these Midshore Fishing Club raffle tickets to give to somebody. So if somebody out there puts the first comment in there, let me have that
drawing
ticket.
Soon, isn't it? When's the drawing?
The drawing is going to be in November of 2000. Oh, no, it was yesterday. No, I'm just kidding. It's November 2020. That's when the drawing's going to be. And you get a snakehead fishing trip for three anglers, including lunch at the Wolford store during the 2021 season. And, you know, we would give that to you for the first person that says, I would like to have that raffle ticket. So, sorry for the interruption. You guys go back to whatever.
I just want to know if you're going to go with me next year.
Oh, I'm going. Okay. As long as my wife's not pregnant again.
Oh, Lord, are you telling us something already?
No, whoa,
what's up? No. Damn, dude.
But no, I'm definitely going next year for sure.
Yeah, you guys got to, man. It's an experience of a lifetime. The most thing, I fished it four times, and what I found the most out of anything was this year. I was just determined to go out there and have a good time. You know what I mean? No matter what, I didn't care. Even Sunday when I blew a motor, I said, guys, I don't care. We're going to go out there a couple miles, throw the anchor, freaking, you know, try to catch a shark. We're just going to have a good time. And that's what we did.
Minus the anxiety of watching the leaderboard.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah. It was serious anxiety. Serious.
No doubt. But it's still a good time, though.
Yeah, man. It's the time of my life. I wouldn't change it for anything. I mean, the only thing I would have changed is, I guess, you know, like the ceremony wasn't, you know, much because of the COVID problems, right. You know. It wasn't a big ta-da like it usually is, you know. I didn't know if I could bring Bonnie with me or not, you know what I mean? It was just crazy. Yeah, I wish I could have had her with me because she is absolutely the backbone of my fishing.
Oh, that was very, very sweet. You know you're going to get a attaboy for that, right? But let me tell you about attaboys, right, Frank? If you're anything like me, you can pile them attaboys up that high, and one of your all shits knocks that whole pile down.
Oh, yeah. Gone.
So you get home tonight and enjoy that attaboy while you can, brother.
Definitely.
I know Z-Man wants us to give away one of these chatterbaits here, and you heard me talking about that in the beginning, about this 1/8-ounce chatterbait.
The micros.
It's getting cold, and it's getting kind of chilly, and you want to downsize your stuff. Again, remember, slow down. The fish are slowing down. We're not burning topwater baits anymore, you know what I mean? Winter's here. It's getting cold. The fish are very lethargic when the water first temperature drops. Going to need two or three warm days to get them biting again. If we get two 60-degree days, you might be able to get you a topwater bite somewhere. You know what I mean? If you really work hard for that.
Yeah, I had two topwater bites. Like a Sunday. At Egypt Road Pond.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, had my big frog on. Had a little. They were small bass. Too small to eat the big frog I was pulling.
That's a fun little pond. I love that pond, man.
You know, I've caught a 5-pound bass in there.
I got pictures of some big ones too.
Bonnie's with me.
You know how I catch them over there? Everybody doesn't like, you know, I'm a bait guy a lot of times, but I'll hand pick him big old bull minnows like that and just plug one out there and throw it there and just leave it there. And I'll take one more and I'll throw it on the other side of the island with a piece of split shot and a leader like that so it stays up off the bottom. You can find one of them 5-pounders.
You know, put time go over to the truck and get that quarter stick.
Don't say that. Do we have Parks and Rec all over our ass? Just
the best bait I've used in there is a cream worm, you know, double hook. you know, they're rigged already when you get them. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I took Wayne Brown over there, and he would not put down a torpedo. I think it was a little black torpedo. He kept jitterbug. Kept throwing that thing all day long. He wouldn't put it down. Same thing. He kept missing them. There's some good fish in there if you put the time in. You know what I mean?
There used to be pike in there, but I haven't caught
any. I haven't seen any of them either. No, there used to be big pike in there that were there, you know what I mean? But I think some of the kids slip in there and, you know, they get them big fish and they're like, well, I think I'm going to take it home.
Yeah.
They don't read the rules out there. You know, you can't keep nothing, you know, so.
Well, it's a great little place to fish right up the street, you know?
Oh, yeah. Close by. Kaz, you got any one mores or anything?
No, I don't think I have much in the way of one mores. Gary, is there anything we want to talk about as far as hunting? Anything we need to know? What's going on with the rut right now? Yeah,
going tomorrow. I'll let you know next week.
You still hearing a lot of bugling out there?
Yeah. I've heard every time I've been. Of course, you know, I can't complain. I've been hunting 4 times this year, and I've got 2 deer already. So
if I'm correct, if you get one more, you're tagged out for your bow season, aren't you?
Only in Maryland.
In Maryland. Not for Blackwater. Yeah.
Right, that's where we're hitting tomorrow.
What about the crop damage permit? You're not tagged out on that yet, are you?
No, you know, I'm usually hunting until the last day with bow, but looks like, you know, I'll get late muzzleloader.
Yeah.
I think everybody's getting excited for the muzzleloader season that's coming. I see a lot of people are coming down here. I see the weekends are getting busier. Let's see. Joe Spangolo.
I don't think you said that right.
No, I didn't. So I know Joe. I go ice fishing
with
Joe. So Joe, you get the chatterbait. And who? Mike Rose got the what? Mike Rose got the raffle ticket. Yep. So got what? So Mike, you can stop by the store and pick that up. And same goes for you, Joe. So now you're going to come down here. We're going to mail a ticket.
Yep.
But Joe's going to have to stop down here to get his fishing lure on his next fishing trip.
Yes.
Okay. So Joe, that's what you got to do. Come down here and get that fishing trip.
I will tell you one thing though.
That's good.
Anybody's got feeders out and the raccoons are driving you crazy? October 15th, raccoon season comes in.
There you go.
But you got to have a fur bearer's permit. It's only $5, but you can
a lot of headaches.
Yeah, you can have $5 worth of fun with a .22 rifle.
So help me understand.
Green light,
let me remind me of something. The fur bearer's permit, can anybody get that, or do you have to take that fur bearer's?
It's just, when you get your license, you can just go in and where you got your license or anywhere, take your license in with you and just tell them you want a fur bearer's permit on there. It's $5.
Okay.
Makes
and
it easy for
warp
you.
Them.
More money.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well worth the $5.
Oh, yeah. That's one bag of corn.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Suckers eat that much in 2 days.
Is that how we're going to equivalate things here on these instruments? Well, that costs 4 bags of corn right there. If it was only 3, I'd buy it.
That's probably how it's been done for about 300 years.
Don't you guys deal with Bitcoin?
Yeah. Instead of Bitcoin, we got Bitcoin. How about that? There you go, Gary. That was Gary's thing for the night right there.
That was a good one.
You watch. Somebody's going to do that shit right now before we're off this damn podcast. Bitcoin.
It's already gold looking, you know.
Call Mr. Phil Jackson, get him on that. And Bitcoin, you know.
Man. Unbelievable.
What? I think we had a good show.
Yeah, I think so too.
Frank, I'm really glad that you came out here tonight and helped us out.
Hey, man, thanks for you guys having me, man.
Absolutely.
Really.
Thank you all for coming down.
We try to have a good time, right?
Absolutely. Always.
And we try to help out the public as much as we can, right? So remember, if you're coming down here to the Eastern Shore and you're going fishing or you're going hunting, please take your trash. If you didn't bring your mother or your maid with you, we'd appreciate that. While you're here, please say please and thank you to the people that you run into, as we're a kind community. We ask the same of you when you visit. And before we go, let's leave you with a little crabby jingle. But before I do that, I want to do one thing, okay? I want to give Miss Paula Redmond, look, we're going to give you 2 dozen large crab this weekend at the crab stand, okay? Look, folks, this weekend's going to be hot out there at the crab stand. The freaking soft crabs are off the hook, brother. Look, I'm not talking about sandwiches. I'm talking about not an 8-inch sub roll. I'm talking about you better go out and get a 20-inch sub roll to put 2 of them soft crabs on there, you know what I mean? Because that's what you're going to get on a 20-inch soft rib. No, they're not 10-inch soft crabs, but they are that big. I'm not kidding you. If anybody's seen them the last couple of days, they are massive, and that's what we're going to have, and then it's going to be over. So stock up. Make sure you got these things. Also, if you're coming down again, you're going fishing, get in touch with Damien Cornflower. Make sure you get your bait. The minnows right now are just amazing. They're big, they're lively, and those that are using the minnows are really, really connecting. So before we leave, I would like to leave you with a little crabby jingle from the crab stand. So Paula Rebin, make sure you stop out this weekend and get your crabs. So before we leave you, I want to say thank you for everybody tuning in this week to the crab or to our podcast. You know, we really appreciate everything that everybody's given us as far as feedback. If there's anything you see us do different that would help make the show better, we're here and we're willing to listen. So before I leave, let me leave you with this little crabby jingle. My crabs, they have three first names. It's Heavy, Full, and Fat. My crabs, they have a fourth name. Absolutely Mustard Packed! So, Frank, you want to sing it with me?
No.
If you ask me where they're from, they're 100% guaranteed Maryland number ones. Right here, a little chop tank, the big chop tank, the Honga River. We got crabs coming out our rear down here. At the crab stand, here's a fact I know for sure you're coming back. Kapow! Kapow and kapow!